The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Keep your comments coming in, 51551 for your texts. You can email ray@rte.ie. Now, it's not every day you get to say this. Sir Tom Jones, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. We're smiling here in Ireland because the sun is shining, an occurrence we don't see very often in these parts.
I know, I'm Welsh. It's the same thing in Wales.
Listen, you're coming over to Ireland for the Punchestown Music Festival at the end of July. Are you excited to be coming back? I think the last time you were here, it was the, this time last year, was the Marquee in July.
That's right, exactly. No, I always have a great time in Ireland. I first went to Ireland in 1965 when I had It's Not Unusual out.
Right.
And I played the first gig I did there was on St. Patrick's Night in the Boom Boom Room in Belfast.
I'd say that was a quiet one, was it?
I mean, that was like, wow. You know.
Great, well, listen, I want to start with The Voice because I have a special interest in this. I actually hosted the show here in Ireland. It ran for 5 seasons, The Voice of Ireland here, and I loved it. You always look like you're really enjoying it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a thing that I would do anyway. You know, young singers come and ask me for advice when I see them, and that's always been like that. So I think it's a very interesting thing, and I think it's a unique idea, especially the blind auditions. You know, when you just listen to a voice and you don't see that person, you know, it's different. It's a different thing entirely. You know, and then hopefully when they're any good, you know, you hit your button and you turn around, and sometimes you get a surprise. You think that you can't really picture anybody. You know, you can't get a picture in your mind about who this person is going to be. You know, if it's a he or a she or a young or old. You know, there's no real way to find out until you actually see them. But I mean, it's a great thing that it's all about the voice. You know, it's not about it's not so much about the way you look, it's about the way you sound.
Mm. And I remember reading that when you were approached to take part in the show as a coach, and they came to you and they said, listen, in order to do the show, in order to do The Voice, we need the voice.
That's right. Exactly.
Fantastic. And listen, of all the coaches, I mean, you've worked with Will.i.am, you've worked with Jessie J, Rita Ora, our own Danny O'Donoghue. And that kind of, certainly it's what makes the show, it's what makes the format work around the world as well, is the camaraderie, the rivalry, the interaction between you guys and everybody having their own different style, everybody having their own musical influences, which then dictates what the teams are going to be made up of.
That's right, and I mean, you know, the common denominator here is that we're all performers.
Yes,
you know, we're all on stage. As with some, you know, talent shows, some of the judges are not performers. You know, so
yeah,
but we are. So that's the big difference, I think.
Did you get stick, or do you have to kind of fend off questions from journalists? Because it's something that certainly, as a production team here, and I know with our own coaches and myself, we had to, you know, fend it off going, we haven't produced a star yet. You know, it was a question that I got all the time. And my answer was, you know, this is a platform. This is a platform for singers to come and show their wares, if you like. It always sort of bothered me.
Well, no, I mean, the truth of the matter is this. You know, when you win a record contract, you know, I mean, if you win The Voice, or you're exposed to, and a record company might want to sign you up, you know, even if you don't win it. But if you win The Voice, you're getting a record contract. It doesn't mean to say that you're guaranteed a hit record. It's still getting your foot in the door, you know.
Yeah. And how do you, I mean, Will.i.am is somebody that, like, the world has fallen in love with, no more than yourself. I mean, it's the voice sort of opened you up to a whole new and younger audience, I suppose. You're probably one of the few people who can out-cool Will.i.am on stage.
Well, you know, I mean, Will is the first one to say that he's part of the Black Eyed Peas, you know, when he's performing. And but he's not a singer. You know, he's more of a producer than he is a singer. So, but I'm a singer.
And of all the women that you've worked with on the panel, who do you admire most?
Well, it was great to work with all of them, to be quite honest with you, because Jessie J, you know, she's a hard case. You know, she would she would steam into some of the singers, and she'd tell them exactly what they should do and what they shouldn't do. And I used to say to her, don't scare these kids off. You know, I mean, you do have fun as well. You know, it's not all, you know, she used to say, this is hard work, you know, this is... I said, well, maybe for you it is, but I'm having a ball myself. So,
and you always looked that as well. We know, of course, that you were axed from the role by the BBC in 2015. It came back on ITV in 2017. And you spoke openly that was a big shock for you when you were dropped.
Yeah. Well, it was the way that it was done. That was the thing. You know, it was like a last minute thing. You know, we got the call. Saying that they were not going to renew my contract, you know, for the last series, and you know, we said, well, when did you decide this? Yesterday, they said.
Wow.
And then they said, and the press are going to get it tomorrow. I said, oh well, that's charming. That is
very, you know, nice, I mean, of them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because you see, they always used to leave it to the last minute. To know, I didn't know whether I was going to do, you know, it was always one series at a time. I didn't sign for any length of time. And then you can't put a tour together. You can't do anything until you get the dates.
Yes, yeah.
Of the Voice. That's the priority. So, you know, we were waiting and you know, what are we going to do? I mean, I got musicians that want to know if I'm going to tour or am I going to do the Voice or what am I going to do? You know, and I got a stylist and I got, you know, there's a lot of people involved.
Yeah,
with, that you take on board or you don't, you know, and I used to try to tell them that every year, but it was always like, you know, wait until the last minute before we got the news. And then, of course, you know, the last one was was the other way around. So then, you know, all of a sudden you got to think, oh, well, wait a minute. Now I've got time to tour, you know, now I've got things to do, but you can't put a tour together that fast.
Yeah, for sure. And are any word then, probably not at this point, on 2018? Returning to The Voice?
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to start in October.
Oh, happy days. I'm delighted that you can tell us that. And I suppose The Voice, like, it wasn't your first comeback, if you like. When you look at the brilliant duets at the turn of the millennium, that saw you roar back onto the pop scene in the 90s. Amazing, amazing tracks with amazing artists.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a... You know, I mean, to do that album, it was suggested to do duets with people. So where I started to find out who would like to do it. You know, and I met the Stereophonics in Wales. They came to see me in Cardiff, you know, and the same thing with Kenneth Matthews and the Manic Street Preachers. And then, you know, the word went out and a lot of these people came to the table. So I thought, wow, this is great, you know, that I can do, you know, I can do an album with these people. You know, and Mick Hucknall, and you know, there's a lot of people on there that I wanted, and Van Morrison, of course, you know, that I've known since 1964. But it was great to do songs with these people, to know that they were interested in working with me. So and it worked. You know, we got some great stuff out of there.
And was it a comment from Michael Jackson that spurred you into that? Right, I have to get back on track. I have to do something about this in terms of, you know, making a splash again.
Yes. He came around to my house with LaToya Jackson, you know, because I had this house in Bel Air, and he used to go to Quincy Jones's house, which was just around the corner. So he came into the house one night, and he was looking at all my pictures in my pool room, and he said, wow, you've had a great career. I said, had? You know, having? And he said, oh, yeah, well, you know, but he said, you're not recording anymore? I mean, what's happening?
Yeah, that so planted thought, oh, the seed.
God. Exactly.
Yeah. Because how long did you play in Vegas?
Oh, my God. From, I think I was the longest artist to play there, you know, longer than Sinatra. It was, I started in 68.
Yeah.
And I don't think we finished until about 2008.
And, I mean, did it just become tedious and boring and soul-destroying towards the end? Or was it, you know, was there always being on stage that kind of kept you going?
Yeah, it was... I was past my sell date.
Tom Jones, you are never going to be past your sell date.
No, but you know, in Vegas, it did. It got old hat, you know, and I thought, no, I need to get out of here.
And when you go back to Vegas now, do you enjoy
no,
it?
No, I don't go back there.
At all?
I don't work there. No.
But do you go back yourself on holidays? Have you been back?
No.
That's it. Vegas, you're done and dusted.
Exactly.
Talk to me. Do people call you Sir Tom Jones all the time?
Well, in Britain they do. You know, I mean, it's not all the time, though. It all depends. Mostly it's Tom, you know.
Yeah. Because
or Mr. Jones, you know, the young people call me Mr. Jones, you know, but it's very rare anybody would call me Sir Tom.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is a real honour, though.
Oh, Christ. I mean, that's the most, you know, I never expected that. When you start off, you want to be a singer, you want to get hit records, you want to get on television, you know, and you want to do all those things. But a knighthood, my God. You know, and now Van Morrison, you know, we were talking about it the other day. I was with him in Los Angeles, and we were saying, my God, you know, we started in 64, and, you know, he came from Belfast. I met him in London, and I'd come from Cardiff, and here we are now, two Knights of the Realm.
I mean, when you come back now, you're going to be playing Punchestown and you're touring at the moment. People want the big classics, you know, they want the It's Not Unusual. They want, you know, they want all those tracks. Do you still love playing them? What else is in the playlist? Any new stuff that people have to look forward to, or do you just do what you do best?
Well, when I do, you know, when I do the classics, I try to mix them up a bit. You know, I try to do new arrangements on them, you know, and but they're still very recognizable. You know, it's not that, you know, Delilah's always going to be Delilah. You know what I mean? No matter which way you cut it, it's going to be there. Mm. And the Green, Green Grass of Warm, you know, the same thing. Those classics are there. But I try to, some of them I try to, you know, change up a bit, you know, so that they fit with some of the things that I'm doing now. You know, they're not that, you know, it's not that different. It's not like when you put a record on, like if somebody played It's Not Unusual, which I recorded in 1964, and they put something on that I did now, you'd hear the difference, you know, in the sound. But when you do them live, they don't sound that different from the other stuff that I'm doing.
Speaking of It's Not Unusual, that's a song and a track that nearly didn't happen.
Yes. It was a song that I did the demo on it for Sandy Shaw. And I liked it so much, I said, I got to have this song. You know, and then they had to play it to her because Les Reed was one of the writers on it, and he was commissioned to write a song for her. So they played it to her, and God bless her, she said, whoever's singing this song, that's his song. I couldn't do it like that.
Wow. There's a testament, if ever there was one. And then the Green, Green Grass of Home, that was one that probably, am I right in saying it took you a long time, or it took you a few listens to decide that it was one that you wanted?
No. I was always sure about the Green Grass of Home.
Okay.
The one I wasn't sure about was Watching Your Pussycat.
Ah, right, okay. For what reason?
I couldn't when Bert Bacharach first played it and sang it to me, first of all, it's a very unusual melody, you see. It's not the run of the mill structure. And he started singing it, and Bert, you know, he can't sing that well anyway. He was like, well, what's the guy? I thought, what the hell is that? You know, so I wasn't getting that at all. But the Green, Green Grass of Warm I heard on a Jerry Lee Lewis country album. It was called Country Songs for City Folk.
Wow.
And I heard it and I thought, my God, that's some song there.
And of all the big ones, of all those, you know, those big Tom Jones classics that we love, which is the one for you that does it all the time?
Well, it's not unusual because it was my first one. You see, it changed my life.
Mm.
So it's the most important.
Mm. Because you moved to America in the 70s. You got your green card and you set up there. I mean, and then you went out on your own because you were originally Tommy Scott, then you were Tom Jones and you had your band, then you were solo. And moving from Wales to playing the circuit in the UK to moving to the States in the 70s, I mean, what was that like and what was the scene like and how were you... how were you welcomed in at that point and how long did it take to realise... Okay, holy God, this is working for me. We're on the right track.
Well, it was, you see, when coming from Cardiff to London was a big leap. Because, you know, English people are not Welsh people.
Yeah.
It was different.
Yeah.
You know, when I when I walked into a pub in Shepherd's Bush, it wasn't like walking into a pub in Pontypridd where everybody was singing and wanted to know where you were from, and you know, they want to know the ins and outs of a, you know, a cat's behind. But the English didn't give a, you know, they didn't ask questions. They didn't care. They were getting on with what they were getting on with.
Yes.
So there was a big difference for me to come to London. After that, you know, going to New York, to me, they were more like they were in Cardiff, you know, in New York, than they were in London, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. And you've been,
you know, they were more open, you know, they were more wide open.
Mm. And you've
different accent, but the same attitude.
Yeah. And you've, over the years, I mean, you've been mindful of not picking up too much, too many Americanisms. I mean, you still have you still have the voice, you still have the accent.
Yes.
Do you get home to Wales at all?
Not as much as I would like. Uh-huh. Because, you see, Wales now, a lot of the people that I grew up with there, you see, are not there anymore. You know, most of them are dead. So it's not quite the same. It's not like going back and, you know, going out and having a few pints with the fellas that I grew up with. There's not that many left.
Mm. Yeah, and do you miss it? Because I'm looking at a comment from you here, you know, when they were, you know, your people, the Welsh people, you're in a pub, you're doing a gig, and somebody shouts up, "Hey, Tommy, when are you going to get up off your fucking arse and move to London and teach those English how to sing?"
I mean, exactly.
that's character, that's you, that's Wales, that's in you.
Exactly, and that's never left me. I mean, it's so vivid. I remember being in that bar with this big Welsh rugby player, and he was looking at the Rolling Stones on the TV when they first came on the telly, you know. So he spun around to me and he said, "When are you going to get up off your ass and get to London to show these English bastards how to sing?" So I said, I'm leaving tomorrow, Glenn. His name was Glenn O'Gavin, his name was. So I said, "I'm leaving in the morning." I mean, it took me longer than that, but...
That's brilliant.
Yeah, he was disgusted at what he was saying.
And going from the small gigs, the small pubs, to worldwide fame, did you deal with fame very well?
Yeah, because I was striving for it, and I was singing in workmen's clubs and that, you know, and so I mean, I'd made a bit of a name for myself in South Wales already, you know, with my band, you know, we were touring around, so it wasn't like all of a sudden it was completely different. It was just, it was on a bigger scale, you know. When you get a hit record, of course, everybody sees you, you know, on the telly, and then they know who you are. As opposed to, it's just bigger. But I was ready for it, you see, because I'd learned my craft. I'd been on stage, because some people, you know, they get a hit record and they haven't put an act together yet.
Mm. And I suppose you see time and time again, I mean, we see it, or we certainly read it in the papers, you probably, you know families or no artists that you're closer to, where it happens so quickly now for people, and too quickly for young people to be ready for it and to be ready for what comes with it and the intensity and the intrusion. And, you know, it's like, for example, Justin Bieber here played last night, and all we've done for the last couple of years is read about how, you know, fame and how his success has affected him, you know.
Well, listen to this. I got a story for you. There's a duo that off the Voice, they're called Into the Ark. They're two Welsh boys, right?
Yes.
So they're going to come on the road with me. They're going to do some shows with me. So I just was rehearsing with them 2 days ago, and one of the boys, he said, I said, "How is it for you now in Wales, you know, after being on The Voice?" And one of the boys said, "Well, I used to love going into a McDonald's, but I can't go in there anymore. Everybody wants a selfie."
And that's it. We've just become like the world of selfies, and you know, we exactly. Always want a bit of everybody. Speaking of fame, I was reading about your fine self in yesterday's paper, the day before, and you were out on the town with Axl Rose, lead singer from Guns N' Roses. Were you causing havoc in the Chiltern Firehouse, or did you behave yourselves?
Well, we had a good time. I mean, what happened was, there was a fight on, you see, from Vegas, and I was trying to find out where can I see it, you know, because it was coming on at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
And I was in the bar at the Savoy, and people from the Guns N' Roses were there, you know, the tour manager. And she said to me, "Axl Rose is in this pub, and he's going to watch the fight, you know, and he's invited you over there. Do you fancy going?" I said, "Yeah, I've been trying to find out where I can see it." Yeah. So And I'd never met him before. I mean, I'd met Slash a couple of times, you know, his guitar player, but not him. So we went over there, and it was great. You know, we had a great night together. But I wasn't aware of, it was a bit noisy. I was at Ritz. But I wasn't aware that there were police involved outside. They said they were trying to tell us to keep the noise down. But not me. I mean, they didn't single you out. No, I wasn't aware of it until I saw it in the paper.
Well, Axl Rose, you see, has been my secret crush since I was 14 years of age. So anything, I follow him all the time. So,
right.
Nice guy?
Yeah, great.
Good.
We had a great time. We had a few pints together and had a laugh, you know, and that was it.
Brilliant stuff. And yeah, I saw them in Slane a couple of weeks ago and they still have it, you know. They have an incredible stage. So before I let you go, I want to just finish off by asking you, how are you doing? You know, you've had a tough year. You're 77 years of age. I hope you don't mind me saying that. You're singing, you're touring, you're a grandfather, you're busy. And does all that being on the road and being on stage and doing what you love, does that keep you feeling like you?
Yes. I wouldn't have it any other way.
That's what we love to hear. Well, listen, we're looking forward to having you back in Ireland. Tom is playing the Punchestown Music Festival Sunday, July 30th. Make sure you get there. It's going to be a fab gig. Sir Tom Jones, lovely chatting to you.
Thank you, Dom. All the best.